And if they are saying, I don't like this, you should change it. And when they're saying, I don't want the police in my school, we should make sure that it is a police-free school.
Welcome to Black Educators Matter. This is more than a moment. It's a movement.
Hey, it's Brooke.
And Danielle.
Welcome to Black Educators Matter. Our goal is to share the story of 500 Black educators.
In this safe and healing space, we will highlight the important roles that Black educators play in all of our lives.
We're excited to welcome today's guest to our show.
As a do now, please tell us your name, your role in education, and answer the question, why do Black educators matter?
My name is Cecily Maillart Cruz. I am a sixth and seventh grade English teacher by trade, and I am on full-time release as the president of United Teachers Los Angeles. Black educators matter because simply we do. Our babies need to see us in these spaces. And it is so vitally important for us as educators to show what is possible in engaging with our communities, engaging with our babies, engaging with other fellow educators, but to really uplift the profession and do justice for our babies and the communities in which we serve.
Now, where are you from?
I'm from born and raised Los Angeles, California. Born and raised here, went to public schools all my life and graduated in 1990. I have a seventh grader son who's in our district and he's at my alma mater. So I'm really proud of that.
That's really sweet. Now, tell us more about your K through 12 experience. How would you summarize it? And did you have Black educators growing up?
Well, and there it is. I went to public school. I've been in public education, obviously, for my whole life. However, from pre-K to sixth grade, I was in a Christian school called United World International Learning Center. I had all Black teachers. All of the educators at United World were Black. So I feel like I have that unique story because that's all I knew were Black educators showing us Black excellence on a daily basis, making sure that not only that we knew reading and writing and mathematics, but like showing us high level development in science and dance and drama and like things that bring us, well, what I say, things that bring us joy, because there's a lack of joy in our schools today. And that's probably a podcast for another time. But I really appreciated the role that Black educators played in my upbringing. And then when I got to seventh grade, there were no Black teachers. There were Black custodial staff. There were Black, what we call ESPs, education support professionals, right? The paraprofessionals. But, you know, you may have a Black educator who is a PE teacher. But I didn't see a Black teacher who was teaching English or history. We didn't have that. And so I graduated at 16. And so I skipped from third to fifth grade because of Black educators really instilling in myself and my peers that you had to be top notch. You had to be better than better. You had to be better than most. You had to be the one that, like Sugar Free says, You don't have to get ready. You have to stay ready, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I do feel like that's what I learned from Black educators is making sure that you're always on point. You're always ready for any conversation, any debate, anything. And you always did your homework ahead of time. You did not do your homework the day of. They assigned it on Friday. It was done on Friday, you know? And that's also, I'm half Black and half Mexican. And that was my dad. Black man, like, you got this assignment Friday. Nope, we're not doing the go to the park and play. We're going to the library. You're doing this assignment today, and then you can relax on the weekend. And I would always say, like, my dad is so strict, he's so hard, but I see the value now of actually getting your work done so then you can kick back. And I have to always, I'm always thinking about my dad in the work that I do, and I'm always leading. I feel like the ancestors continue to lead me in the work and the advocacy that I do as well.
Shout out to our fathers and the impact that they can have. My dad used to take me to the library all the time and used to get the thickest books. And I'm
Ever.
still, yes, in love with reading a super thick book. So, as you reflect, what would you say, in addition to everything you shared, incorporating the joy, what are some highlights from your time as a student? And then, what would you say are some lowlights?
So I think one of the biggest highlights, and obviously the question will come at the end, but I'll shout her out twice, had to be my fifth grade year with Shelley Banks. Shelley Banks, teacher extraordinaire. I wish that I could find her. She took us on a field trip to Guadalajara for a week. Obviously, yeah, like what? All these Black kids, and my mom went as our chaperone, one of the chaperones, and we went to Guadalajara, and it was so amazing. Like, just the things that we saw, and then how the people greeted us. You know, many of our of my Black sisters had their hair braided because we didn't know if we're gonna get into the water or whatever. Had their hair braided with the beads on the end. And like in Mexico, they'd never seen nothing like that before. And so they were like wanting to touch the hair and, you know, like, wow, they were just like, because they have never seen any Black young ladies and young men before as well. So I would say that that was an absolute highlight, is something that stays with me. It also says to me, education is a great pathway, but so is travel. And there's so many connections, obviously, with education and travel and learning different cultures. And, you know, my son wants to be a United Airline pilot. You know, his dream is to fly a 787, and I know he's going to do it. He wants to go to Hampton. They have the best aviation program in the country, and so that has been his goal. And I say that because since he was in the womb, he's been flying, right? His passport has many stamps, and I always tell him, like, not everybody has the opportunities that you've been afforded through my work. You know, we do a lot of traveling. And so you always have to stay grounded in that. But those two things, education and travel as a communication, but also as a learning pathway. And a low light. I recall my college counselor at the school that I am an alma mater of, and remember the college counselor taking my college applications and ripping them up. Yep. Yep. That happened to me. that happened. And, you know, whether she thought I was not applying myself all the way, I don't know, but that stuck with me. And, you know, from there, I went to Santa Monica Community College for 2 years. I said, I'm only staying here 2 years. This is not a 4-year stint. I ended up going to do programming at UCLA and then went on to Mount St. Mary's and then Pepperdine and, you know, run the gamut. But I think what that showed me is that I already knew racism existed, but this white educator could have, or she perceived that she could have power over me and decide what my destiny would be.
So, reflecting on that experience, your experience with your dad making you do your homework as soon as it was assigned, your extensive travel, because I went to a magnet school, so they did do stuff like that. But
Our school is a magnet school, so.
okay. I'm like, that's kind of unheard of, like taking a bunch of kids to Mexico for a week. So I was like, whoa. But considering all of that, how did your student experience influence your college choice? Did you go as a declared education major?
No, when I started at Santa Monica College, what I wanted to do was actually, I mean, I guess in some way I wanted to work with children. So I knew that. And what I really wanted was to be a child psychologist. That was like my thing. I wanted to do that. And, you know, you have to take jobs and, you know, keep yourself afloat. And one of the jobs that I had was becoming a teacher's assistant. And I became a teacher's assistant at Rosewood Avenue Elementary, which is in LA Unified, and ended up being the shop steward there. These things just happen to me because people see, oh, she's a fighter. You're it. You do that. And while I was a teacher's assistant, I got paired first with a fifth grade class who I love them. And then I went on to be in a K-1 split bilingual kindergarten class. And so English and Spanish. And the teacher, her name is Reva Rose, she was on her way to retirement. And she was like, you have such potential in being an educator. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, I think you'd be really good. So what she did was she sat at the back of the room with that big thick book you were just talking about. She had a novel that she was reading, and she let me teach the class. And so, like, when I started teaching at 21 in Compton, and like, you know, people always say, like, oh, my first year was the hardest. My first year wasn't the hardest. It's because those little kids were my guinea pigs. So, you know, trying to figure out, like, okay, yeah, they're vibing to like what I'm talking about here, blah, blah, blah. So I did a lot of, okay, was that a good lesson? Was it not? I did that as a teacher's assistant. So then when I got that first job as an educator, I was like, okay, I know what to do. And let's just keep rolling. And, you know, and that's what I've done. But yeah, I think, you know, as I went from Santa Monica doing some coursework at UCLA and finding my path over at Mount St. Mary's, that's when I said, I really want to become an educator. This is my jam, y'all. This, you know, even though I still have, like, I really want to be a child psychologist, but it's like, this is my jam. Like, I am very animated, I'm very loud, I'm very boisterous, I'm passionate. And like, students gravitated toward me. And, you know, the relationship between educator and student is really symbiotic. And when you have that, it's just phenomenal. And, you know, when they trust you, because that's a big part of it, when they trust you, you'll get everything and more from them.
And that was actually my next question. Like, shout out to knowing that you always wanted to work with children, but how did you identify that sense of connectedness and shared identity? Like, do you think that that exists with your Black students? And if so, how did you recognize it?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, one, as a biracial Black woman, you know, who has either not been Black enough or not been Latina enough, right? And up straddling the world, and you're like, oh, you're not. It's like, I'm a biracial Black woman, period, because you're going to need to know, you know, that's why Brianna is still here, because she still needs justice and Black lives matter every single day, not just trendy on a t-shirt, right? So I present as my authentic self. I mean, I taught elementary for so many years, and then I got the opportunity to go to middle school, and so many other colleagues were like, I'm going to wait for that elementary job to open up. And I was like, look, if you can teach, you can teach anywhere. So I just believe in myself, and I'm going to be myself, and then we'll just go from there. And that's what I did. And middle school is my jam, literally, sixth and seventh grade. Like, we're like, they don't want to hear you read. Like, oh, they want to hear me read, because I'm animated with my reading and the intonation, and people know, like, I'm not playing. Oh, you got this face on. Oh, let's get to work. You know, and I just come and I have to be authentic. And I'm also a role model, right? I mean, like, there's been, you know, I always have conversations because a lot of biracially Black girlfriends. And, you know, one of the things that we always say is like, when we were growing up, there was no doll that we had that looked like us. And that's true. And I mean, I had my dad searching for that Black Cabbage Patch doll and I couldn't get it because they didn't make enough for all of us Black little girls that wanted that Cabbage Patch. So I had redheaded Cabbage Patch doll, and I couldn't even pronounce the little girl's name. Her name was, it's Penelope, but I thought it was Penelope, right? And that part has always been, I mean, even with at Christmas time or holiday time, like, I knew my kids, and I had mostly, you know, either brown boys or brown girls, right? Black and brown folks. And I knew it was so important to find a doll or something that had an image that they could grasp onto. And that would be like, I've got to find them because I want them to have something that represents who they are. And, you know, that's the type of person I am.
So in your authenticity, you've trained thousands of educators nationwide, focusing on breaking down misconceptions of Black Lives Matter and racial justice, and centering the work of educators in love and empathy. Tell us about your career, but also how long have you been in education and what positions have you held?
Ooh. So we'll start from the back to the top. I started teaching at 21. I just turned 50 in November. So that's 29 years in education.
Look, girl.
Okay. Because it's been a long day. But I would say 29 years in education. I taught kindergarten for a summer, and that's what I really thought I was going to do until I had that kindergarten class in the summer. And they had all the snotty nose and things, and then touching me with it. Huh. I was like, oh no, wait, Let me think this over. I am not a kindergarten teacher. My girlfriend is a kindergarten teacher. You see her, and you're like, yeah, you're the kindergarten teacher, not me. So I taught first grade, which I loved. I had a student that would not go to any other teacher. Mikhail was his name in Compton, and I had to loop with him to second grade. So learned a new skill in teaching second grade. And then I ended up, my dad fell ill and I had to leave after 3 years in Compton and I moved to LA. And then I taught fifth grade, which I loved. And those kids begged me to come to middle school, but I just wasn't ready at that time to come to middle school. I was like, no, I'm going to teach fifth grade. Then they put me back in second grade, but I taught the second grade. What it was called IAS, Intensive Academic Support. Those were the students who flunked second grade. They didn't even, so they, those babies were like 7 and 8 years old, could not identify a letter at all. So we spent the first, from August to December learning letters. And then, the race is on. Because I got to get these kids reading to keep it moving. And that I loved doing that and just all of the stuff that we did together. And then I moved to middle school, and that was a game changer. I am a middle school teacher. I mean, I can claim elementary, but I'm a middle school teacher. Sixth and seventh grade is my jam. That's my jam.
This is just one of the many stories, and we hope to keep the conversation going.
Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter at BEM Chicago.
Follow us on Instagram at blackeducators.matter and visit us online at www.blackeducatorsmatter.org.
And now, back to the conversation.
So then the first question that you asked me.
Just basically, just tell us a little bit about that journey. Like, why did you choose to go that route in teaching all of your teachers?
Yes. So my girlfriend and I, so I came out of the classroom in 2014 as a vice president of United Teachers Los Angeles. And that was the year Michael Brown was murdered. And in August of 2014, I believe it was August 19th. And I said, we need to put out a statement as our union. And people were like, huh? I was like, we need to put out a statement. And we need to affirm who this baby was. And I don't care that they want to label him a thug. We need to label him as one of our babies, and that could have been our baby here. And what I did was we put out a statement. We got a ton of hate mail, hate, 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 where people were writing their name. I'm a teacher. My name is such and such and such. I read all 1,000 of those emails. And my girlfriend and I, she was a board of director. I said, I don't care about that hate mail. We have to form a racial justice task force in our union. Never have done that before. So we formed it and we only had like three people. But I said, we have to get community. So we got LAPD coalition, spying coalition. So these folks follow the LAPD and all of their surveillance and everything. I was like, oh, we need them at our table. We need Black Lives Matter LA at our table. We need our students group at our table. Students deserve, they're on Instagram, students underscore deserve. They need to be at the table in this conversation. And people are like, you guys are really going to say Black Lives Matter? Like people are going to say like White Lives Matter and Brown Lives Matter. And I was like, who is being killed right now? Black folk. So we got to say Black Lives Matter. And so we took a lot of stuff and our members were like, you're saying what? And so we said, we've got to come out with a one pager and we've got to like just dive in why Black Lives Matter in regards to us being educators and how we see our babies and how we need to affirm who they are and uplift their experiences. And their experiences are different than my experiences. And if they are saying, I don't like this, you should change it. And when they're saying, I don't want the police in my school, we should make sure that it is a police-free school. It's not my comfort, right? We all want to be safe. But if we make our babies safe, and we have the supports in place, like mental health supports and all of that, can we do away with having heavy police presence on campus? And so we started having these conversations around, and we were having these little forums, kind of pop-up forums. And we were like, we want to hear only from the students. We want you as an educator and parent, we want you to hear the students. We don't really want you to like have your opinions. I want to hear what the students are saying. And so we started doing this. And then our last one that we did was held at historically Black high school, Dorsey High School. And we had like 2,000 students and parents and community folks to come and have that conversation. It just broke open like the discussions in our union. And it just furthered the point that my girlfriend, Erica Jones, she's now the secretary treasurer of our state union, California Teachers Association. And it just affirmed like, we've been doing all of this work. It's time to like take it to the next level. We've got to start training educators. We've got to make sure that we're not looking for allies. We're looking for co-conspirators that's going to get in front of the room. And also to delve in, if you fix it for that Black student, then you fix it for everybody. And if you don't have any Black students in your class, there is a student in your class that is trans or LGBTQ IA+. And if you fix it for that baby, then you fix it for everybody. So that's like how we, that's our model. That's what we do. And we trained all over with that regard in mind.
So with your 29 years of experience in the game and this philosophy that's been shaped by your own experiences growing up, your own educational exposure, and having to live through these civil rights moments that I don't think any of us would have imagined that we would be dealing with at this point in time. What advice do you have for first year educators, especially as they are engaging in trying to balance all the things in 2024, DEI programs being defunded, all of it. So like for a first year educator who's just entering the game, what advice would you have?
First and foremost, be your authentic self. You have to show up and show up for our babies. If your heart is actually in education, not my heart is in education for the moment, but I'm trying to be an administrator. Take it from someone who has an administrative degree. I just got it, but I'm a teacher all day long and I'm a union leader and activist. I'm never going to what I say, the dark side. I'm not going there. going to stay here because it's so important. I would say to those young people or second career folks that are new in education, get you a mentor. And how you know a good mentor is someone who comes in and day out that is doing the job almost effortlessly. You want to know what's their secret sauce. You want to know what's their magic, how they do what they do. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to say, I'm authentic. When we watch Abbott Elementary, right, Cheryl Lee Ralph's role, her kids aren't running around the room. Why? Because she's exactly who she is. And they know it, right? And so she has that respect to command a room. A big part of it is being fun, having fun, because all of it is the doldrums. All that paperwork, all of that is the doldrums. But if you're staying true to what, ask your babies what they need. It may not be the curriculum that day. It may be a restorative circle. And that's okay.
So 29.
Because at the end of the day. Oh, I was going to just say, at the end of the day, that's what they need.
Yeah. So out of these 29 years, has there ever been a time that you wanted to quit?
No.
Really?
Okay. Now, in these 29 years, some of these folks that I work with, I'm like, you know, when they're like, you made me cry today. Oh, that's a you problem, not a me problem.
My husband used that phrase today, and I literally was like, where did you get this from?
I don't know, but it is, I have to say, it is a you problem, not a me problem. And the reason why you say that, because I am not taking your negative energy into me. I'm going to radiate with positivity, and you're going to radiate how you radiate. And it's not, you know, it's no shade, but I've told people that all the time. Teaching middle school, where you have folks kicking kids out for not having paper and pencil. You just giving free days to folks? No. Here's a paper and a pencil, baby. Okay. What's the problem? Because we're here to learn. Like, if I'm giving, I hope you're catching it. You know, like, this is a symbiotic thing. And it's also about not just being a sage on the stage. Because that's hella boring. If I'm just doing all the talking and folks, my babies are not getting to engage with their peers, their elbow partners, engage with me, like, you know, Cruz, I think that quote is wrong. Okay. Tell me why you think that. Let's have that debate. Who else thinks that? Okay. Back it up with a critical statement. Like, talk to me today. You know, we're going to learn today, all of us. Stay in that learning mode. I think another piece of advice that no one gives, because it's kind of scary, when you make a mistake, tell the kid, I made a mistake. I made a mistake. Or if I yelled at you, Brooke, and then, you know, the next day you're kind of coming in looking kind of salty, so in front of the class when I reprimanded you, you know what, Brooke? I was having a rough day. I was really hangry, and I took that out on you. I just want to apologize right now in this moment in front of everyone to say, I'm really sorry for that. And, you know, it's going to be a constant work in progress, because sometimes I may be a little hangry again. Being able to say that to students gives them the agency to make mistakes, and you just modeled how you are a leader by doing that. And that's what, you know, in my role now, I have to do that a lot. Like, yeah, we messed up right there. My bad. How do we remedy? How do we move forward?
That is the perfect segue from my final question for you. It has to do with how do we remedy? How do we move forward? So thinking of all of the experiences that you've had as a student, as a professional, as the leader of a union, what is the state of education in Black America and how did we get here?
We got here because, as Dr. Bettina Love says, it was by design. People just don't want to believe that, but it is by design. The system is doing exactly what it's supposed to do in this time. It's supposed to be failing Black folks. You know, schools where parents are like, it was not welcoming there. That's by design. Why are we not having welcoming spaces, bringing people I don't want this, or like, no, I need to hear it to fix it, right? But also, state of Black education, we don't have enough Black educators. In our state of California, there are 310,000 educators. Of those 310,000 educators in California, 12,000 are Black educators. Of the 12,000 that are Black educators, 2,500 are Black men. People are like, what? Right.
I know about the 2%, but I'm still trying to wrap my mind around the Black educators over 300. That is insane.
Insane. Insane. And so when you don't have, like, my son's first Black teacher, he's a seventh grader now, his first Black teacher when he was in the fourth grade. He had a Black teacher for fourth grade. And that was on Zoom. So he didn't get to get all of her, you know. And shout out to Stacy Thornton. She left LA and went back to Dallas, Texas. He didn't get to get all of her gems as a Black woman teacher who had that vibe and swag. We had to get that through the camera, emote through the camera. Just such a disservice. And then in fifth grade, he had Miss Porter, and she was a biracial teacher. But he hasn't had a Black, he has a Black homeroom teacher.
You don't get plenty when you send him to Hampton, though.
That's right. He has his sweatshirt already. And that's why I have to, that's why I lifted up Stacy Thornton. And the reason why I did, in fourth grade, we were in COVID, right? And what she did and she's an AKA, she's a soror of yours. Every Friday, she would take the babies on an HBCU virtual field trip. And so, like, she would preview, okay, today we're going to Howard. So I was like, oh, my son's name is Giovanni. I was like, Giovanni, you going to the Mecca, you know? And then he, you know, would come from the field trip, the virtual field trip. And he was like, I didn't like Howard. I was like, you know what? What? And then he was like, they did so many HBCU field trips. And he's like, Mom, I want to go to Hampton. And I was like, okay. So then later, because he's a plane geek, he's like, you know, I really want to go to Hampton, but, you know, I think I should go to Tuskegee because that's where the Red Tails are from. So I'm like looking on the internet and I was like, Giovanni, they don't have an aviation program at Tuskegee. And he's like, what? How is that possible? And I said, I don't know, but they don't. So then I looked, what's the number one aviation college in the nation? Hampton. So I told him and he's like, yes, yes. All right. I knew I made the right decision. So I have to thank her for the exposure. And that's the piece, right? So when we talk about the state of Black education, and it's so dreary when we know that we don't have enough educators here in California and Black male teachers for real, you have educators that are doing some phenomenal things that take us to a new level. You know, like I said, things are designed the way they are meant and supposed to. However, it is us, the educators, that must dismantle the system. It is us to break down those pipes and pathways so that our babies actually can experience like the Wiz. We don't need to go to the wizard. We don't need to go like, we need this to take us forward because it's dreary. And they're going to keep in the South and places, they're going to keep cutting AP African American history. They don't want you to teach this. And we have to say, our babies deserve truth. And we've got to preserve that. But it's also on us as Black educators to bring the realia into the classroom, to cultivate trips, to learn, even if it's something that happens at school. I saw that Black educator, maybe you did as well, who took her kids on a Southwest trip to Mexico, and they had snacks and all of that. I mean, that was phenomenal. And that's Black teachers all the time, right? Creating things even when they don't think you can.
Making something out of nothing.
That's right. Making a way out of nothing. Saying, I got five on it because this is what we're going to do. We're going to get these snacks. We're going to, you know, you're going to be on the plane and all of this stuff. And just what a beautiful, that I really had tears in my eyes because I was like, yes, Black educators really, really rock.
Yeah. And I commend Southwest for like bringing the moment full circle for inviting her and her entire class, you know, on a plane. And I mean, they didn't go nowhere, but, you know, still, like, I thought that was super dope. Probably too much liability involved. But you shouted out two educators already. Will you name the rest that aided in your success?
Yes, I said Shelly Banks. I have to say, you know, my father, you know, may he rest in peace, right? Cecil Jordan Myart. Like, my father, you know, just had a little bit of business college, but what he instilled in me was a love of learning, but also knowing your craft and getting your butt to work and a work ethic that I think is what I lean on when I say, I lean on the ancestors to lead me where I should be going. You know, people like Ella Baker and Fannie Lou Hamer and Shirley Chisholm. Those are the ancestors that are like, keep going, bell hooks, keep going, right? Audre Lorde, like, keep going because it gets thick out here. My math teacher, I would love to see him again, Mr. Smiley, Black educator, just that really did something for me at my school. Miss Noble, Kimberly Noble, she was phenomenal. It's not that many to shout out. And that just shows the disparity that Black educators are faced with.
Well, Cecily, thank you so much for spending time with us today and walking us through your career. And also just, again, emphasizing how important it is, the foundational relationships that we have with education that start in the home. Because even though your dad was not a formal educator, he certainly contributed to your education. And it was the same for mine, who's also an ancestor. He was a driving instructor, so I get, and I can parallel park anywhere. Okay, we'll know it. I can parallel park anyway. So, okay, shout out to dads. Shout out to all the dads. Yes. But thank yes. you for coming on and sharing your story. And as mm-hmm. a reminder, everything that you've done, it was, it is, and it always will be worth it. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Black Educators Matter. Remember, make excellence equitable and thank a Black teacher today.